Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Harlan McCosico. The Human Consciousness Project is launching the world's largest scientific study on what happens when we die. The study is called AWARE, and it will probe the relationship between mind and brain during clinical death. The results may revolutionize medical care of critically ill patients and provide profound universal implications for our understanding of death and the great mystery of what happens when we die. What does the Native world have to offer to this conversation? Are our beliefs as valid as any other? Join us as we discuss what happens when you die right after National Native News. This is the Tuesday, September 23rd edition of Native America Calling. I'm your host, Harlan McCosito. What happens when we die? To many Native tribal people, this is sometimes referred to as the great mystery, because there are a lot of unknowns about what happens when we die. Although, like many other cultures and religions around the world, Native people certainly have our thoughts and our beliefs about the afterlife. Now, there's a new study being launched by a group called the Human Consciousness Project, and it's being called the world's first and largest study ever on death and near-death experiences. Now, when you think about this, I mean, there are different beliefs when it comes to Christianity, who are granted salvation. Christians are granted salvation and eternal life through the acceptance of Jesus Christ as their Savior. And there are other beliefs when it comes to Islam and Hinduism, Buddhism, and many others. The list goes on and on. But today, I'd like to get your thoughts on this subject. And because, like I say, you know, Native people, we have our own beliefs about the afterlife. And these are still being passed on today. And I want to ask you if you feel that Native beliefs are as valid as any others. And also, you know, do you think that a scientific study will be able to come up with any conclusive findings? What could they possibly reveal? We're gonna find out. Okay, we're gonna be asking, you know, what happens when we die, and we're going to unlock all the secrets today. The great mystery will be revealed. Seriously, this is a very taboo subject for many tribal people. You know, we acknowledge that, but in today's world, many of these discussions are taking place in private and in public forums as well. And we certainly don't want to offend anyone. That's not what we're on the air to do. But we want to have this conversation about what happens when we die. And we're going to be talking about this this project called AWARE. But we're also going to be talking with a couple of Native men. And I want to introduce you to them right now. But let me give out the phone number. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining me right here in Studio 49 is Leon Secretaro, and he is a Navajo spiritual messenger, a headman from Tohajali, which is just west of Albuquerque. And he is also the founder of the Spiritual Elders of Mother Earth, a group in consonance with the ancient teaching of the Americas concerning the eagle and the condor and the healing link these noble birds symbolize for peoples of the South and North. Welcome to Native America Calling, Leon.
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us here in Studio 49. And also joining us from Lethbridge, Alberta, is Dr. Leroy Littlebear, and he is a professor of Native Studies at Lethbridge University, and he is from the Blackfoot Nation up there in Alberta. And he also, I've met him when he's been the moderator of a conference here in Albuquerque called The Language of Spirit. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Leroy. Hello, Mr. Little Bear. Do we have him? We'll come back to him. We got him on the phone there. Also joining us from New York is Dr. Sam Parnia, and he is one of the world's top experts on the scientific study of death and near-death experiences. And he currently splits time between hospitals in the UK, including, I believe, Southampton, and where he is. And he's also works with Cornell Medical Center, where he is a fellow in pulmonary and critical care medicine. And he also authored the book, What Happens When We Die. Welcome to Native America Calling. Sam?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
It's good to have you with us. Also, first of all, Leon, let me, you know, a lot of people have different beliefs, and we know that. But from your belief system, the Navajo, what is death? How do you define it? Are there certain terms that you use?
It's a kind of a, over the years, the word in Navajo, the word dazta, it really became negative, and it was not negative from the first speakers of these words. Long, long time ago, 300 or 400 years ago, the word dazta, there's two words in there that's a very positive thing if you look at it from the ancient word. The first one, da, means the reverse. It means the, if you're going spiral, everything, all the energy that you have, that you use, is going spiral. And at certain time, when the time comes when you stop, da means the reverse, meaning you're going the other spiral. That spiral is important because it sort of stops and going the other way, a different, using different kind of energy. And then what it also means is the second word, which we call tsa. Tsa is going back to the biblical court, going back into the womb. It means reverse and then going and reset, recede, and goes again. So in Navajo, we really don't have the word the word death. It's a continuous energy that comes together, and it only has its own property that resets and goes again.
Okay. Dr. Parnia, let me ask you, from coming from a scientific and a clinical or medical perspective, what's the definition of death?
Well, the way that we define death, which, you know, you've probably seen on television as well, is that we look for essentially three criteria. One is that there's no heartbeat. One is that there's no breathing. And then the third thing, which you've seen people shine a light on the eyes, on their pupils, to look to see if the brainstem, the area of the brain that keeps us alive, is also functioning or not. And so what we look for is to look that the pupils have become fixed and dilated. And when these three criteria are met, in other words, the heart stops beating, the person stops breathing, and the brain shuts down, that's when someone is clinically diagnosed as being dead.
Okay, and tell us more about this study that's been launched and is now underway, called AWARE, which is, an acronym for Awareness During Resuscitation. Tell our listeners and myself more about it.
That's absolutely right. Well, the key thing you see is that, contrary to what people commonly perceive, death is not a moment. So, you know, we always watch television, we watch films, you know, and you have the hero who's just been shot, and he tells everyone, go, go, and then suddenly he just drops dead. And then so people think that, you know, you're either alive or you're dead. Biologically speaking, and certainly from a medical point of view, death is very much a process. And if you think about it, after the heart stops beating, although we say that someone is dead now, in fact, what's happening is there's tremendous change taking place inside the body. As a consequence of a lack of blood flow to the brain, the brain cells initially go into a shock, into a panic kind of mode, and then within a few minutes they start to undergo damage and change, such that eventually, over a period of time, the cells die off, and actually with time they even disintegrate. And then ultimately, if you follow the process over a few days, then you see that the body itself starts to to be lost as well, and we're then eventually left with just a skeleton. So death is very much a process that begins when the heart stops. The question, though, that we're interested in asking, which is really what fundamentally matters, is what happens to the person, what happens to the mind and the consciousness after the heart has stopped. Do we lose our mind and consciousness immediately after the heart stops? Is it a few seconds, a few minutes, tens of minutes, or over an hour after the heart has stopped? And of course, at this point, scientifically, we don't really know when that happens. But what has been shown, as you would expect, is that when you study the brain in people who've gone through clinical death, whose heart has stopped, that there is no brain activity going on because there's no blood flowing into it. And however, if you then look at other studies carried out where we look at what people experience during that time, consistently we find that 10 to 20% of people who've gone through clinical death and been brought back to life will report some kind of activity of their mind or consciousness. So the big question is, does your mind and consciousness basically continue for a period of time during death or not? And AWARE is the world's largest study which aims to understand what happens when we die. And it's a collaboration of over 25 medical centers in predominantly in the UK and in the US. And we're looking at various ways to study the brain as well as the human mind and consciousness during clinical death to see what happens.
Thank you, Dr. Parnia. And Leon, you were the subject of a story here that I'm looking at called Journey Among the Windwalkers. It says Grandfather Secatero recovers from a stroke. And this happened back in February of 2007. You experienced a stroke. You eventually lost consciousness. And I was hoping that you could tell us about that experience and sort of talk about Sam's comments just there about whether or not we lose consciousness and the separation between mind and body.
I think it really there's a different path that for a while. I don't know how many seconds or so. I think your body begins lose all touch, and then all of a sudden, after a while, it begins to come back together, but in a different form. The sound is the thing that really comes to mind. The amplified sound that is so clear that it's sort of like a sound in the dark, and that sound begins to somehow work and amplifies certain kind of energy. Begins to build in, and then all of a sudden you see the light, a different kind of light bouncing back and forth, and then you begin to try to, your own body begins to look for some kind of a connections, and that connection is it's kind of amplified, and then slowly, the light begins to be brighter and brighter, and that this is the first time the colors come in. But the different colors, not only what we see now in when we're alive, but the other side when there's when it comes, it's psychedelic, and after few seconds, maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes, something happens where this light begins to organize. The sound begins to organize. And then you can hear things here and then way far. You can hear the earth. You can hear the sky. And the water, you can really hear the water dripping and floating and flowing. And then it begins to take its own, I couldn't understand it, but maybe a direction. What different kind of dimension there are. It begins to take one or maybe two and stays within that focus for some time.
Let me give out the phone number once again. And today we're talking about what happens when we die. And we have with us here in the studio Leon Secatero. He is from the Cañoncito Band of Navajo. He's a head man, a spiritual man from the Tohajli community. And he's also a founder of the Spiritual Elders of Mother Earth. And you just heard him talking about his story of almost going to the other side. Back in February of 2007. Also with us on the phone line, Dr. Sam Parnia. He's one of the world's top experts on the scientific study of death and near-death experiences. And he also wrote a book called What Happens When We Die. He's also heading up a project called AWARE, which is Awareness During Resuscitation. It's the largest and the first and the largest scientific study of what happens when we die. And also right now I want to bring in another of our guests. But first of all, if you want to join in, if you have a question or comment, the number to call, 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're going to open up our phone lines here in just a few minutes. But first of all, I want to bring in Dr. Leroy Littlebear. He's professor of Native Studies at Lethbridge University up in Alberta from the Blackfoot Nation. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Leroy.
How are you, people? Sorry for the mix-up, but we're here now.
Yeah, yeah. And Leon is here.
How are you, Leon?
Hello.
And we have Dr. Sam Parnia also as well, Leroy. Let me ask you, we started off talking a little bit about, whether or not death is a moment or a process. Is it a journey? Leroy, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, let me preface what I'm going to say with the following. For the majority of us, with the exception of people that maybe have had near-death experiences and people who have gone into the other world and came back, but for the majority of us, what happens when a person dies and afterwards, I think to a large extent is, speculation about, we got thoughts and ideas about it, okay? And until we're actually there, I guess, there's really no way that we can actually know, okay? So that's what I wanted to preface what I was going to say.
Okay.
Okay. Now, from my point of view, the whole notion about death has to be understood from the point of a native paradigm in our case. Okay. That native paradigm, for instance, consists of what I refer to as flux, a constant flux that occurs. Now, that flux, in turn, is made up of energy waves. In other words, everything that exists is simply a combination of energy waves. So you and I, animals, rocks, everything we can see around really is a combination of energy waves. So when we are alive, a certain combination of energy waves exists for our existence. If you want to put it at a personal level, yes, okay, we're a combination of energy waves. And in fact, a number of people even go so far to say each organ in your body is a separate combination of energy waves, which in turn all work together to make up who you are. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now, when a person passes away, what really happens is that those energy waves really are dissipating. In other words, that particular combination that makes up you or me is now starting to dissipate. And at full dissipation, then the person doesn't exist. But when we're talking about awareness, and the brain, for instance, is only one major organ within the body, I guess that awareness itself consists of energy waves. So the thing is, when a person dies, that combination that continues to make for energy waves, yeah, goes out there in cyberspace, if you want to call it that. And for the long, you know, I don't know how long, maybe differing lengths of durations, that awareness continues to exist. In other words, those energy waves is what causes awareness. And a particular awareness makes for your awareness and my awareness, and for the rock's awareness, and so on. Okay? So the thing is, eventually, that combination also dissipates. The energy waves don't end. The energy waves continue to exist, but it's the particular combination that makes for you or me that dissipates, and that puts an end to you. But the energy waves can go on and make new combinations, which will make for new awarenesses. So that's how, you know, I see what happens after death.
Okay. All right. Dr. Parnia, can you give your reaction?
Well, I think that there's obviously a lot of subjective beliefs about what happens when we die, and obviously we respect everyone's opinion. The question, obviously, I'm not an expert on every view that's out there, but I'm interested to hear them. But what we're interested in is studying objectively what happens. Now, as I mentioned, we know that 10 to 20% of people who've gone through death will report some kind of experiences and memories. Now, I actually disagree with your guest about the fact that we cannot know what happens, because, as I mentioned, death is not a moment. Death is a process, and it starts when the heart stops beating. And what we find is that although, you know, if this continues for over an hour, then the damage to the body's cells is so extensive that even if you restart the heart, you cannot sustain life. Nevertheless, in the early phase, it's reversible, and it gives us a window of understanding into what everyone will experience.
Okay. Dr. Parnia, you know what? I need to take a break, and I'm wondering if you can stay with us for just a few more minutes.
Okay, sure.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break right now. We're talking about what happens when we die. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, and I promise you we're going to be taking phone calls when we come back from break. Number to call, 1-800-996-2848, and we'll be right back. Rosebud Sioux author Joseph Marshall has released his second book in his acclaimed Lakota Western series. It's a sweeping tale of the Battle of the Little Bighorn and the defeat of General Custer, portrayed in an entirely new light. I'm Harlan Mikasato. Join us for our book of the month, The Long Knives Are Crying, on the next Native America Calling.
Trouble. Hi, I'm John Harrington. I'm a Chickasaw citizen and a former NASA astronaut. Are you interested in supporting the representation of American Indian and Alaskan Natives in engineering, science, and technology fields? Now is the time to join the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. This year, we are celebrating over 3 decades of removing the academic barriers for Native students. With over 2,000 students and 15,000 alumni, ACES invites you to complete the circle by giving back to our community and enhancing the future of generations to come. For more information, visit ACES.org.
If you're a Native American, there's one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native businesses. Your vote on Election Day makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Vote for our people, our land, and our future. Go to nativenews.net for more information. Vote on November 7th and let your Native voice be heard. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm your host, Harlan Macasato. I'd like to say hello to our listeners tuned in to KTDB in Pine Hill, New Mexico, KCUK in Shuvak, Alaska, and KSUT, Southern Ute Tribal Radio. And today we're talking about the great mystery. And we're asking, what happens when we die? And there's a new study going on. In fact, it's been reported as the world's largest study on near-death or out-of-body experiences. It's called AWARE, or Awareness During Resuscitation. It involves a collaboration of 25 major medical centers through Europe and Canada and U.S., and will examine some 1,500 survivors of cardiac arrest. And but what are your tribal stories or your beliefs on what happens when we die? Do you believe in an afterlife? And do you believe that Native beliefs are just as valid as any others? Give us a call if you'd like to join in. If you get a busy signal, keep trying. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. And on the phone line with us from New York is Dr. Sam Parnia. He is one of the world's top experts on the scientific study of death and near-death experiences. And he also authored the book, What Happens When We Die. Welcome back, Sam.
Thank you.
Yes, and also in the studio here is Leon Secatero. And he is the head man for the Dehajali community, the Navajo, the Canyoncito Band of Navajo. And he's also the founder of the Spiritual Elders of Mother Earth. Welcome back, Leon. And also with us from Lethbridge, Alberta, is Dr. Leroy Littlebear. And he's a professor of Native Studies at Lethbridge University, and he's from the Blackfoot Nation. Welcome back, Leroy.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. I want to go to the phone lines right now. I want to bring in our first caller, Oliver, who's up in Santa Fe listening on KUNM. You're on the air, Oliver.
Hi, everybody. First of all, thanks, Harlan, for putting on the show. I think it's amazing whenever we can study something that has one foot in the science aspect and one foot in the spiritual or mystical aspect. I think it's great. My question for Dr. Parnia deals with the glial cells in the brain. Which they're not neural cells, but they're thought to suspend the neural cells within the brain. And I've done some reading, and there's some suggestions that they might be electromagnetically sensitive and able to provide input to the neural cells. And I was wondering if Dr. Parnia could comment on whether he's studied what happens to the glial cells during the death process.
Okay, good question, Oliver. Dr. Parnia?
Well, what we study, of course, is the global brain function when people have gone through clinical death. And the way that you can study this is, one, either by measuring electricity across brain cells or measuring oxygen levels to see how much blood is flowing into the brain. In general, the studies that have been done of the brain obviously don't focus on individual cells, but they look at the brain as a global organ, and they usually have studied this using electricity to see if electricity is being generated, as well as trying to see what happens in terms of blood flow inside of the brain. And they will generally show that the brain function as an organ ceases. Now, if you then go and study what happens to the cells, obviously the cells that are deprived of oxygen, whether they're glial cells or the actual brain, the neurons themselves, start to undergo change and then eventually die through, you know, one of two different mechanisms. Either they implode, a process called apoptosis, or they explode, a process called ischemic cell death. But it's a consequence of a lack of blood flow that this happens.
Okay, Oliver?
Okay.
Any comment?
Not really. I guess, my brother-in-law is working in Los Alamos on a simulation of the human cerebral cortex, and we talk a lot, and it turns out that, I guess, study of consciousness is an extremely controversial topic, mm-hmm. and he had to avoid it like the plague, or nobody would fund his research.
Right.
I asked him about the glial cells, and he says there's enough complexity going on with the brain with just studying the neurons that they're not really interested right now in those. But maybe in the future something will turn up. I don't know.
Okay. Oliver, thanks for your call from Santa Fe. Dr. Samparni, I know you need to get on to some other business. We appreciate you being on the program today.
Thank you so much. Good to be there with you.
And the project is called AWARE. And it's awareness during resuscitation. There'll be you'll see it more. There was an article in Time magazine, and there's also a link to the Human Consciousness Project on our website if you want to find out more about it. And if you want to join in, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. And let's go to Mishkwa Gishik up in Lakota Ray, listening on WOJB in Wisconsin. Welcome to the program.
Bonjour. I'd just like to share with everybody that you're all going to die someday. So it's all up to you to recognize who you are. It has to do with understanding that you will never, never figure out death. You can be a genius. You can be a scientist. You can be an engineer. It's one of those things that Gichimani Du, the great spirit, has for us. As human beings, we will not be able to figure out death. It's meant to be that way, and that's our understanding. Why? Because at we're at a time now, we're living in a time of prophecy. So as Anishinaabe people, we have something to give and offer us at this time to the Ashkenazi think the people of color will be coming to us. We have something. It's called the Ogichida Niwi Win Ceremony. It's a sun dance. So what that represents is actually dying. When you go without water for 4 days, without food for 4 days, you begin to die. So that's part of our understanding and our teachings as our Ogichida Niri Win ceremony. It's a ceremony for everybody, but in the same sense, it's not for everybody, but everybody benefits. As we've been told, many are called and few are chosen. We understand that scientific means to an end, but what happens if there is no end? That's what I'd like to share with our scientists and the people who are out there in those programs and those and those people who are studying all that. Those programs are set up for failure. Otherwise, you'd be out of a job in those simple terms. So what we have to offer is a way of life. Our brothers told me that in a good, positive way, another old Gichida brother, and you talked about life on the other side. On the other side, then he looked at me square in the eyes, and he says, "Brother, you're already there. So who's really on the other side?" That's what I want to know. Who can answer that question? So.
Yeah, that's the question.
Right.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Is there certainly we don't there's a lot of unknowns like I mentioned in the beginning and
right.
but there are beliefs that we have. Is part of the Anishinaabe belief that we will get to see our ancestors, our relatives, our loved ones when we go on?
That we can prove that to you. You can do that. We have our ways. We call our Jibai ceremony, and that's specifically just to get in contact with the other side. So we do have ceremonies, and the truth of the matter, we can prove it. But people have to have that test of faith. And our understanding is if you could answer these four simple questions, and it's deeper than your name when I ask you this, I'll go through them real quick. It's who you are, truly, who are you? Second question is, where do you truly come from? And what do you want out of life? The last one, what is your purpose? If you can answer those things, then dying is easy. The truth is, it's harder to live. That's the truth. That's been shared with us.
All right, Mishkwa Gishik.
Oh.
Thank you.
Oh.
Thank you for calling in and sharing that with us.
Gani gana.
Leon, any comment about that call?
That's really my understanding. When you put a few words in Navajo, when you put it together, they all kind of sort of explain the direction that everything is to go. There is a word in Navajo they call Sa'anagai Bikehojo. Sa'a is the cosmo. Bikehojo is all going, and we are related to everything that's alive in the moving process towards the future. That future, everything is like black hole going in that direction. That's forever. So when you look at this thing in that in the process, nothing is that nothing is would say that had it loses its time. It is always energized. In a seed, everything is a seed, and it dries up. Sometimes we eat it, but it still comes, the energy still is there. And that energy is forever.
Now, many cultures believe in reincarnation. And is that the same thing?
Yes, it's sort of in a sense, but the thing of it, nothing dies. It's re-energized, and replenish and then goes again towards that future.
Okay, let me give out the phone number. We're going to take some more calls. We're talking about what happens when we die, and you know, what is your definition? What is your tribal or native definition of death? Because, you know, for some communities, you know, you don't have to stop breathing, or your heart doesn't have to stop to be considered dead. What do you think about that? Also, what you know? Do you think that what we do in this life determines our status in the afterlife? All right. Give us a call if you want to join in. 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to go to the phone lines. Let's bring in Nastasia, who's up in Bethel, Alaska, listening on KYUK. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for putting up with my patience. I just need to share an experience of what I call, describe, best description of it is peaceful death. This was like, my daughter's 21 years old, and she was somewhere between 3 and 4 years old then when I had this experience, and I was in the process of, I was taking care of a very close lady friend who was dying of fallopian tube cancer at a local hospital here. And we call it Samyo, you call it God in English. Plowed me through in a dream into this crystal bright light, and it didn't engulf me all the way. But I believe, and trust in with all my faith, that when it had engulfed me completely, I would have been dead. I wouldn't wake up. Except instead of eating me, engulfing me, my whole body, closing me in, it brought me back, and it made me see human beings on this pure sugar like snow, and all I saw was human beings, and they were all sad. And then split seconds, my little girl and my son and my one gay brother I have, or I shouldn't say that, forgive me, split seconds through my brain, and I was flat on my belly, just flat. not standing flat, rising up, and then I started to come back down. And when I woke up, I was barely, I couldn't hear myself breathe. I couldn't feel my heart. And so I started to get up, and then I started to go back. And then I stood out, went into my living room, and sat on the recliner. And I was looking around as if human nature. I was so amazed that I was a human being, and all these objects around me, the walls and my pictures and my furniture, everything around us that we survive with and eat with and sleep with and blah, blah, blah. Anyhow, I looked at the watch, the clock on the wall, and it was 5:30, and then I started to look around, and I looked at the picture of, I was thinking of praying, how to come back into my body. And then it was 5:30 then, and I couldn't speak. I couldn't make up one single word. And I looked up at this picture of Jesus with the thorns over his head. It was just a sad-looking face, a gift from a lady friend in Bethel, Lucy Crow. And I just spoke in tongues for an hour and a half. I'm one of those Pentecost so-called and spirit-filled 38 years ago, and I've experienced a little bit of everything, spiritual laughter and speaking in tongues and rolling and dancing and dancing. Anyhow, it's ended now. And this was just before I took care of a lady friend who was dying at the hospital. And I just needed to share that. I felt truly brave when you mentioned the subject death.
Okay.
And then one last scripture of that I'd like to share in one of my Bible studies a long time ago. I ran into a scripture in the Bible that says something like in the line of words, I wish I could find it, that God's last enemy is death. And when he returns, he's not going to be full of mercy and grace. He's going to be pretty mad, and he's going to stomp at death with his feet and kick him into the lake of fire. That's about it.
Okay. Nastasia, thanks for your call from Bethel, Alaska. And I want to take another call. Let's bring in James, who's in Fort Belknap, Montana, listening on KGVA. You're on the air, James.
Hello.
Hello.
Say, I'd like to share some. I had a bypass in I think in 2001 or two. And during that time, I had some real problems. But my heart stopped. And they gave up on me. But I had an experience while I was out, I was sitting on the slope, and way down below me there was a camp of Indians, a great big camp. And this woman rode up to me on a horse, and she had a travoy. She stopped right in front of me and looked at me for a long time, didn't say anything. Pretty soon she turned around and went back down. And, then that was over, but they put me out for 2 weeks. And they gave up on me. They told me, and when I did come out of it, they told me I wasn't going to live very long. But I'm still alive, and I'd like to share a short story about my grandfather. You know, our people weren't afraid to die. And when he was going to die, he asked my father and my older brother to take him outside. In the summertime, he just wore a breech cloth and barefooted and told them to go back in, but they went around a corner where they could see him because he was weak and feeble. And I asked him, what did he do? And he said he prayed, and his last words were talking to the Creator. He said, this is the last time my feet are going to touch the earth. When I go back in, I'll see you. So we call, when we're going to die, we say we're going to Big Sand. That's our paradise, I guess. That's our, the Groveland people. That's what we call heaven, I guess. And they said it's a long ways away, you know. And anyway, they put a crucifix in front of him, and he looked at it, and he turned his head, and he laughed. He never did go to church or anything, you know. He had his own ways, and he thought it was just a toy, I guess. He just closed his eyes and went to sleep. That was it. He wasn't afraid, you know. So I just wanted to share that.
Okay. All right,
thank
James.
You.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
Leon, you were talking earlier about your journey to the other side that happened, February 07. Mm-hmm. But what brought you back in your mind? And let me ask you this: when a person goes through this, what's it like to come back, and is it more important to teach what is there something that you should have that you feel like you have to share with other people now?
I think it is the awareness what you see on both sides. One side is that they're both good. And they're both very uses a certain kind of energy, and it also brings, like I said, the amplified hearing and colors, and everything is it's beautiful. But the thing is that there is a screen somewhere. And I couldn't go through that screen, and I was just told to go back. And that I don't know how many seconds, how many minutes there was, but it happened. I went back. I was told to go back. You're not ready for this. And but when you wake up, you begin to really feel the what living is. You begin to appreciate that. You begin to appreciate the seeds that are being planted over and over again, millions of years, and they come back the way it is, like the beans, like the corn. There's certain security in there that it will be the same hundreds of years from now, and so forth. So you begin to really feel the goodness of what is here, and you begin to really enjoy that, and you begin to really appreciate all the things that goes towards that future that I was talking about.
Okay. Leroy, let me get some of your comments.
Yeah. Wow. What I've heard is very interesting, and I was wanting to respond to, was it Parnum?
Parnia, yeah, Dr.
Parnia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think there, you know, his study that he's doing to a large extent, I think was speaking to simply kind of like the death of the body.
Right.
And I'm, you know, in my view, it's kind of more like maybe a two or maybe even a three-stage process. I agree with him that death is a process, but I think it's more like two or three-stage process. And I, you know, in my view, this notion about energy waves being, you know, is what makes up everything, including awareness. I think what happens is that the body can die. That's one stage. That's part of the process. But the second stage is when just the notion of awareness and memory occur, you know, is still intact. And if I can just deviate a little bit over here, because I like to look at things from a science point of view, too. You know, in science, in quantum mechanics, there's four major forces that they've recognized. One of them is the strong nuclear force. There's the weak nuclear force. There's electromagnetism, and then there's gravity. But see, the strong nuclear force is what keeps things together and keeps them, you know, in place. That's what keeps things together. Now, if you were to look at the notion of will, W-I-L-L, will, to a large extent, I think about the strong nuclear force being the same as will. And it's the will, if the will of a person that makes that combination of energy forces stay together for their continuing existence. If a person does not have that power, in other words, does not have the will, then the energy waves that make up that person easily dissipate. But the person that has a strong will, the energy forces will remain intact. And so that, to me, is the second stage. And there might be even a third stage where eventually what makes up awareness, those energy waves that make up awareness, eventually dissipate. The energy waves are still there, but that particular combination that makes up you is no longer there. So that's how I look at this process of death and what happens.
All right. I want to take one more call. Let's bring in Ben, who's here in Albuquerque listening on KUNM. Ben, got about 30 seconds.
All right. I just wanted to go real quick about, you know, everyone's scared of dying, and that's really it, is everyone's scared to not make their mark on the planet, you know, just with, like, the Egyptians and how they built big pyramids and stuff because they wanted to be known. You know, everyone is scared of death, and I, you know, the whole afterlife thing is just so that people can think that they've really, like, been a good person for a reason, you know, and you know, it just stops everyone from being, a jerk to each other, which is, you know, I have respect for people like that.
Ben, we gotta go. I appreciate you calling in, but we're out of time. I appreciate all the callers today, and Leon Secretaro, thank you for joining us today on Native America Calling. Leroy Little Bear, thank you very much for being our guest today. We appreciate your time as well. And that's going to wrap it up here on Native America Calling. I want to thank all of our staff for their continued hard work. I'm Harlan Mikasato. We'll be back tomorrow with our Book of the Month.
Native America Calling is produced at the studios of KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Ford Foundation, with additional support from the University of New Mexico. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Visit us at NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.